a great and wondrous sign appeared in heaven. This is Revelation 12. A woman clothed with the sun and with the moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon, 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 crowns on its heads. And its tail swept a third of the stars from the sky and flung them to earth. And the dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth, that it might devour her child the moment it was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter. Her child was snatched up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness to a place prepared for her by God, where she was taken care of for 1,260 days. Quote from Daniel. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back, but he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven, and the great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil, or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled down to the earth, and his angels with him. And then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, "Now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God, and the authority of his Messiah. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been hurled down, and they triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death." Said the night wind to the little lamb, "Do you see what I see? Way up in the sky, little lamb, do you see what I see? A star, dancing in the night with a tail as big as a kite." I do weddings, bar mitzvahs, and as it happened, the night wind asked a very good question. Do you see what I see? And the answer is probably not. The Christmas story. When you open one of those Christmas books, one of those children's story books, it's a very warm scene. It's a scene that draws you in. There is a mother and a baby, and the mother is comforting her baby, and it's a scene of love and of peace and of security, and there is a soft light that is filling the stable, Mary and Joseph, shepherds. And if you look carefully, there on the rafters, there's a cute little mouse just watching what's happening. This is our story. This is the story that we are founded on, that little baby. We've given our lives for the sake of this little baby. And we know the rest of the story. We know what he grows up to do and who he grows up to be. And next week in our family service, there will be a set. There will be a stable. There will be all the things that we expect. It is a beautiful story. It's a story that I love. But that is not this week. This week it's a little bit different. I guess most of us know that that Christmas storybook does not quite tell the whole truth. It is a romanticized story. And we know that a stable is not a good place to give birth to a child. And we know that they are only there because they are unwanted and unwelcome. They are alone, and they are a long, long way from home. And Mary's cries of pain are cries of pain on many, many different levels. Do you see what I see? On that first night, no one saw the whole picture. The shepherds, well, they saw the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. They saw one of them, a shepherd king like David, the Messiah. And when they left the stable, they went and told everybody that they could possibly find what the angels had told them and what they had seen. Did they understand it? Shepherds tend to be young. And maybe some of them were there when this rabbi preaches and heals the sick. And maybe they wondered whether this was the same person who they had seen in the stable. And maybe, just maybe, one of them was there the day that Jesus dies on the cross. Maybe they made the connection. Maybe they understood. Was this what they expected? Mary, she didn't understand. The scripture tells us that she pondered all these things in her heart. She tried to understand. She realized how amazing it was. The Magi, coming from the other side of the world, king, they understood. They recognized a king. They recognized a ruler. They recognized God. But they only saw part of it. Sometimes I think that Herod understood the most. He understood the implications of this baby's birth. He understood what it meant for him. Herod, the patron saint of Sunday school teachers. He knew that it was either him or the baby. He knew the two couldn't coexist. And either he reigned and the baby died, or the baby reigned and he had to give up his kingdom. A choice that we still had to make. The Herod choice. Who will reign in our lives? Do you see what I see? The passage that I read at the beginning of this sermon is the same story. Matthew tells of the visit of the wise men and tells of an angel appearing to Joseph. Luke tells of the shepherds and of an angel appearing to Mary. And it's often said that John doesn't do a nativity account, but he does. That's what we read. There is no stable, there are no donkeys, there are no mangers or shepherds, but it is the same story. It is the story of the birth of the Messiah, the journey of the Son of God into a distant land. Revelation is what's called apocalyptic literature. It's a bunch of other things too, but apocalyptic literature. And one of the things about apocalyptic literature is it wants you to look at the world around you differently, to see it from a different perspective. Not to look with your natural eyes, because your natural eyes will deceive you. You'll only see what's flesh and blood. You'll only see what's physical. Apocalyptic literature wants you to see what the world looks like from heaven's perspective, not from earth's perspective. And if you were to see the birth of Jesus as it looked from heaven's throne room, well, that's what John is telling you. The strange imagery is not there to scare you. Was anybody scared? A little bit. He goes on. It's not there to confuse you. Was anyone confused? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a confusing story, isn't it? It's there to try and make you think differently, to try and make you realize that there's more. Apocalypse is not really about the future. Apocalypse is always about the now. It's about seeing your life from heaven's perspective, seeing history from heaven's perspective. And it wants you to see that there's more to this story of Jesus' birth than just a stable and a manger and a mother giving birth to a baby. It wants you to see a much bigger picture than that. As a result, one of the things that apocalyptic literature will do is take different ideas from different places and put them together. We'll see that in a moment. So it starts with a woman clothed in the sun and with the moon under her feet and with a crown of 12 stars on her head. So the question is, who's the woman? Is anybody brave enough to have an idea? Who's the woman? No, it's not Pastor Caroline. I understand how you'd make that mistake. Anyone brave enough to say, well, if she gives birth to a baby, and the baby is the Messiah, maybe it's Mary. Do you reckon it's Mary? You think it's Mary? You are absolutely right and totally wrong. Now, the imagery comes from Genesis. It comes from a series of visions that Joseph saw. Joseph, the last of the patriarchs. Joseph, who was about to deliver his family. And the Joseph story is actually a type of Jesus' story. So the Joseph story is what we call a prophetic narrative. So what Joseph does is what Jesus will later do. And he sees this vision. So who is the woman that gives birth? Well, it is all of the promises that have been given to the patriarchs and to Israel. It's all of their hopes and dreams. It's all of the prophecies that you find right the way through the Bible of the coming of the Messiah. And it is that that is giving birth. The child is born out of that history, born out of that prophecy. And if you like, Mary personifies all that. She is that person. She's representing all of that history, all of those promises of God. And the Messiah is finally born. The First Testament reaches its culmination. Isaiah says this. Before she goes into labor, she gives birth. Before the pains come upon her, she delivers a child. Who has ever heard of such thing? Who has ever seen anything like this? Can a country be born in a day or a nation brought forth in a moment? Yet no sooner is Zion in labor than she gives birth to her children. And it's that kind of an image. And this child comes in pain and in suffering and in suddenness, the fulfillment of all that was promised. So who is this child? Well, John tells us that he is the one who will rule the nations with an iron rod. And this is a quote back from Psalm chapter 2. Psalm chapter 2 says this. Why do the nations conspire and the people plot in vain? You get that that's what's happening here in Revelation, don't you? The kings of the earth rise up and the rulers band together against the Lord and against his anointed, his Messiah, saying, let us break their chains and throw off their shackles. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king in Zion, my holy mountain. I will proclaim the Lord's decree. He said to me, you are my son. Today I have become your father. Again, this is Jesus that's being referred to. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, and the ends of the earth your possession. And you will break them with an iron rod and dash them to pieces like pottery. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear. Celebrate his rule with trembling. Kiss the Son, or he will be angry with you, and your way will be destroyed, for his wrath can flare up in a minute. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. This is the child that's being born in Revelation. Today, you have become my son. Now, that's not saying there was a time when Jesus, the Son of God, came into existence. What it's referring to is a concept called eternal generation. Did you want a theology lesson? Right, standard Trinitarian belief. God exists as a trinity, as a unity. I thought that was the little wind, the night wind. And God is self-sufficient. So basically, God the Son exists because God the Father and God the Spirit cause him to exist, and they continually cause him to exist. And God the Spirit exists because God the Son and God the Father continually cause the Spirit to exist. And God the Father exists because God the Son and God the Spirit continually cause God the Father to exist. If you've ever done that sort of game, that party game, where you get four young people, they have to be young because by my age you can do yourself some damage, and you get all four of them to sit down at the same time so that each of them sits on the knees of the other person. Have you seen that? And it becomes self-supporting. We can try it after the service. Would you like that? And the idea is the Trinity is like that. It's a self-supporting whole. It continually causes itself to exist. The bit about breaking pots with an iron rod sounds a little bit dramatic. Actually, it was part of the coronation ceremony of the pharaohs. They would get pots, and they would write on those pots the names of all the surrounding nations. And then the pharaoh that was taking the throne would take an iron ruler and smash them. And what he was basically saying is, I'm in charge here. I'm the leader of this empire, and that's the imagery that we've got here of Jesus. And this little baby is that king. And if you could only see the manger from heaven, this is what you would see. And you would see that all of God's plans and all of his purposes throughout creation have come to the head in the birth of this child. And the dragon with seven heads and 10 horns. This dragon is well known within the ancient world. It is the chaos beast, in Mesopotamian language called Tammuz, in the Bible sometimes called Rahab. And this is the beast that causes upheaval within society. Wars and rumors of wars and famines and plagues, they all come from this chaos beast. We are going to call this chaos beast from today on the Christmas dragon. When you get home, you're going to take the angel off your tree and put a red... I think I was about 14 years old when I discovered that I was strange. You'd worked that out, hadn't you? Because nobody seemed to worry about the fact that seven heads and 10 horns was mathematically inconsistent. You know that, don't you? You know, I mean, like, do the three of the heads get two horns and the rest? I mean, how does this work? And this deeply worried me as a child. If you feel equally worried and you're young, it's too late for you. You will end up like me. It took me about 30 years to discover of Bible study to actually understand what's going on here. in that this dragon has seven heads and the horns are not on the heads. The horns are on its back. It's like a stegosaurus. In fact, the imagery that we have of this chaos monster from the ancient world shows that. And I hunted for the image and I couldn't find it anywhere. This dragon is the devil. And John connects the fall of Satan with the birth of Jesus. Now, he's putting together here two things that do not fit together. Because our understanding of this, particularly based on Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14, is that the fall of Satan was something that happened at the beginning of the world. And John takes something that happened thousands of years before and puts it right next to the birth of Jesus. And he's doing that not to confuse you. He's making you understand there's a cause and effect here. And when Satan falls, he doesn't fall just because of pride. He falls because he believes that what God is doing in the incarnation of Jesus is wrong. That the way that God has interacted with human beings is wrong. That the way that he's created human beings is wrong. Loving them, redeeming them, giving them free will. All of these things are wrong. And the serpent's tail knocks a third of the stars out of heaven. And traditionally we've understood that to mean the third of the angels that fell with him. And it's fascinating that he puts Satan's fall here in direct connection with the incarnation, when in reality it happens much, much earlier. Satan is against this plan. It is the reason that he rebels against God. And he does what he can to destroy this child at its birth. He takes the Herod part of the story of the destroyer. And you will realize that the birth of Jesus happens in this incredible tension of all of heaven on one side and all of Satan's realm on the other side. And there's this battle between the two. And it ends up with war in heaven. And Satan is cast down. And because Satan is cast down, the battle moves. And it moves from a heavenly realm to an earthly realm. And it's here that Satan is defeated. And it's Jesus' incarnation that enables this. So you get verse 10, famous verse. Then I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, now has come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah, for the accuser of our brothers, that's Satan, who accuses them before God day and night, has been hurled down. And they, that's us, the inhabitants of the earth, and they triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives so much as to shrink back from death. And you've got this incredible image that when Jesus comes and he dies on the cross, he defeats Satan. But that defeat is an ongoing thing. And Jesus defeats Satan through his faithfulness and his obedience. And those of us that follow Christ get to do the same thing. We get to continue in the same vein, the blood of the Lamb, the word of our testimony. And we get to defeat the enemy by being like Jesus, by showing who he is. Christmas is traumatic, right? I understand that yesterday all of Hamilton was shopping. That every single person in Hamilton was in Te Awa or Chartwell at the same time. I've got this idea. Next year, what we're going to do is do it by suburb. So like Frankton gets to go 1 week and Hamilton East gets to go the next week. I think that will be much more efficient, don't you? Did I mention I'm standing for mayor next time? Someone is going to get that toy that you want for your kids just before you get there. Someone is going to pull into that parking space that you've been trying to find for the last half hour just as you start to turn into it. And you get a decision as to how you react. and you can lose your temper and you can get angry and you can start swearing at them and cursing at them. Or you can react with peace and joy and patience. And when you do so, you're showing the side that you're on. And when you choose patience over anger, the enemy is being defeated. When you choose obedience to Christ, when you choose sacrifice, the enemy is being defeated here and now. As I've said before, do not lose your temper. Just wait until the person has left their car. Then just quietly go up, undo those little screw taps on the tires. Don't tell anyone I said that. This is Christmas. What started in Bethlehem, we continue. We're part of this story. And we are overcoming through the blood of the Lamb and through the word of our testimony. This is what we miss in the Christmas story, the big picture. Oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. If you could only see from heaven's perspective, it wasn't still and peaceful at all. There is a war going on in the heavenlies. In fact, sometimes I wonder whether those angels that end up singing to unsuspecting shepherds are partly there as protection for the child that is being born. This is the drama of Jesus coming into our world. The reason the Son of God was revealed was to destroy the work of the evil one. And that is an ongoing process of which we're part. So this is John's Christmas story. The Christmas invasion. The daring raid. As God breaks into our world to establish his kingdom. This is what we're celebrating. God's purpose, a new kingdom, the defeat of Satan. And Jesus fights this battle. And we continue this battle. This year's Christmas will be safe. How about next year we dress one of the ladies up with the sun in her and the moon under her? And how about we do that? Would that be good? Yeah. We could do that. Anybody volunteering to dress up as a red dragon? Yeah, it will be Boa. Okay, no, this is not a version of the Christmas story. We are ever turning into a family service. It's not family friendly. If you are interested in history, you will find that this story has a connection to a Greek myth. Lotto, who is the mother of Artemis and Apollo, and how Python, the comedian, tries to stop her from giving birth. The emperor who was in power when Revelation was written was the emperor Domitian, and it was his famous bedtime story. And in telling the story this way, John is actually undermining Roman authority. He's saying, not Rome, Jesus Christ. It's clever, but that's another sermon. Christmas is about God's plan for salvation. And you need to find yourself in that Christmas picture. you need to realize that this is a bigger story than the one that we've told in church. If you have nightmares from this sermon, feel free to talk to Pastor Caroline. She will comfort you. I don't know, come by, sing you a lullaby or something. Merry Christmas. And next week will be nice and safe. There's an opportunity for prayer here this morning, and there is food at the back. God bless you.